fourth case of the day is United States against Templeton.
May it please the court. Now may
Mr.
it please
Karp.
The court. My name is David Karp. I represent the defendant appellant, Todd Templeton. There's two issues in the case. First one's a search and seizure issue. The second one's a sentencing issue. I want to jump right away to a question about the second issue. I checked yesterday on the internet to see if the U.S. Supreme Court had ruled in United States versus Begay, B-E-G-A-Y.
It has.
Today.
It ruled this morning in Begay.
According to this.
Yeah.
All right. I'm afraid.
It ruled this morning in Begay, and the rug has been pulled out from under the briefs of both sides.
Right.
Let me read you what the court says. It says, Clause 2's listed examples, burglary, arson, extortion, and crimes involving the use of explosives, should be read as limiting the crimes the clause covers to those that are roughly similar in kind as well as in degree of risk posed to the examples themselves. In other words, not only is felony drunk driving not a crime of violence, but it seems crystal clear that escape and failure to report are not crimes of violence. Now, the United States may disagree with that, but the whole debate here about how many people resist arrest is now irrelevant in light of Begay. Now, if the United States disagrees with that immediate understanding of Begay, I will be perfectly happy to invite the parties to file briefs within the next 14 days discussing the effect of Begay. But otherwise, I'm inclined to think the sentencing issue in this case has been resolved this morning.
All right. Thank you.
Do you you want to file? Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, no.
All right. Tell you what.
Yes. You want to file.
We'll give both sides 10 days to file supplemental memos addressing the effect on this case of Begay. But at least it looks to me, as an untutored read through it, that it pretty much takes care of this issue.
Mm-hmm. All right. With regard to the suppression issue, then, the issue is whether or not the police had probable cause to seize and search Mr. Templeton's car. A lot of the debate revolves upon the police seeing in the car while investigating the wrapper for a BB gun. And I will note that at this point, the police only had knowledge of a connection between Mr. Templeton and a first robbery, the one in Baraboo, in which no weapon of any sort was displayed, or the tellers didn't even notice any sort of bulge. The teller did not think Mr. Templeton actually had a weapon on him, although he did give a verbal threat.
Let me ask you a different question, though. Why, based on what had happened first, did the police not just have probable cause to search that car for evidence of the first robbery? There could have been currency in it. There could have been other material in it. I realize that there's no weapon actually displayed in the first one, and everybody has focused so much on these, this pellet gun. But it seems to me the police know a lot of things by the time they come up on this car. They know that both his mother and his ex-wife have identified him from the surveillance photo. The ex-wife gives them the exact car, license plate number, and everything. There's a teletype sent around. The green Honda with that license plate is found. Why wouldn't that be enough? You think they need to sort of stand there and not open the car door?
I think I understand the question. Mr. Templeton was spotted in a car by his ex-wife 3 hours after the robbery in West Barrow. He was spotted in the village of Oregon, which I think we calculated at the evidentiary hearing is about an hour away. There's no direct connection between the car and the commission of the robbery.
Except Mr. Templeton. I mean, that seems like a connection to me.
And Mr. Templeton is actually very upset that the finding was that his wife knew the exact vehicle and license plate. There is actually some factual dispute as to whether she gave the exact model of car. But be that as it may, the police had the name of Mr. Templeton. They were able to come up with a car and a license plate that was connected to him. If the court finds that because he's driving a car 3 hours after the robbery, in the absence of any sort of indication that the car was actually used at the robbery, used as a getaway for the robbery, I guess I'm sunk at that point, but I don't think I am, because I think that there's enough of a time lapse there that does not in and of itself establish probable cause, and I actually agree with the magistrate's conclusion and his recommendation on that. The magistrate, too, focused on the pellet gun because that, I guess, is the turning point. Not to engage.
Well, and maybe we should, but I have to say, I mean, just looking at this in general, you know, the officers focus on the car. They go up. They look through the window. There's the pellet gun packaging, and they have a lot of information at this point tying Mr. Templeton to the robbery. So it really seemed to me that the district court was correct in the end not to suppress.
Well, I understand. However, I think the court below did not believe there was probable cause without a connection between the pellet gun wrapper. And it wasn't actually
right,
a pellet gun,
it was
a wrapper.
That's what she thought. I'm not sure if she's right. I mean, it's just,
okay.
Is she right? I mean, maybe she is right. I
Well, I would maintain that if the police had knowledge of the second robbery, the Janesville robbery, in which a pellet gun was displayed, and it was pretty obvious to witnesses that it was a pellet gun that was displayed, and then the police, having that knowledge, had seen the pellet gun wrapper, then they would have had probable cause. However,
no, all I'm saying is then you're talking proof, but that's proof beyond a reasonable doubt. The standard is different here, and knowing that he threatened to use a weapon, you know, and finding the wrapper in the car, and this fact that he got ID'd by his ex-wife and mother from the surveillance film in the bank, that's what it's like. You put all that together, I mean, I think that's probable cause.
even without the pellet gun wrapper?
No, because we have the pellet gun wrapper.
Right.
Yeah, because it's reported that he threatened to use a weapon.
But he didn't actually show one.
I know he didn't show it. I'm saying that would be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. But the standard for suppression is just probable cause.
I understand it's a low standard. Nonetheless, there has to be enough evidence that actually connects the car to the offense. And besides the fact that Mr. Templeton was an owner or a user of the car, and that he had been identified by relatives as having been the person to the robbery, that's all they have at that point. There are no further questions. Since I don't need to get into the career offender argument, I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Kirk. Mr. Reinhardt.
Oh, thank you, Your Honors. The seizure and search of the defendant's vehicle was justified by probable cause under the automobile exception to the warrant requirement. As this court has already gone over the facts and circumstances of the case, when you look at the total
question about whether it's an automobile, the only argument is there's no probable cause.
That's correct.
And if there's no probable cause, you can make the search even with a warrant.
Right. Right. In this particular case, Mr. Templeton focuses on the fact that there was no display of a weapon. But I think the district court aptly stated that it's really not a leap to conclude.
It's always wonderful, I think, when the defendant says, I'm such an obvious liar, nobody can take my word seriously. right? The defendant claimed to be armed, and his argument is here that his own claim couldn't possibly be probable cause to believe that he was armed.
Correct. And I think the district court appropriately pointed out that, used what he said and then tied it up with the pellet gun packaging. There's one assertion I just wanted to clear up in the brief by the appellant, in which they claim that we argued on appeal in our brief that this was an inventory search. And when you look at the brief, I'm not sure where that comes from. We clearly state that this was a search pursuant to probable cause. If the court doesn't have any further questions, we'd ask this court to affirm the district court, at least on the probable cause portion.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Reinhardt.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Karp?
It seemed from the brief of the government that they were trying to slide back into an inventory search area, but if it's not an inventory search, then I accept that it has to be would have to be full probable cause.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We look forward to your memos within 10 days on Begay. And Mr. Karp, we thank you for your willingness to accept the appointment and your assistance both to your client and the court. The case is taken under advisement.